Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's version of Raising Expectations. We hope you had a great week, and after this program, I think you're going to have even a greater week than the one that you're facing right now. And we've got a very special guest with us today, and we're going to be introducing him in just a moment. And very quickly, you know how it works. This is March the 29th, and our team is here. We're missing one, so we'll start there. Stephanie is off, Dr. Craig and Stephanie Thayer. Craig, Doctor, you're coming to us all the way from San Diego tonight, isn't it? You flew
live
down
live from San Diego.
Yep. Live from San Diego. All right. So that's great. And Stephanie has a great birthday celebration. Their son is 15 today and just about ready to drive.
Yay. So
Craig said, clear the roads. Here we go. So, and we're sure glad you're here, Craig, and a happy birthday to your son for all of us. That's great.
Thank you.
And we've got Dr. Paul Hall. There's Paul right there, a retired pastor, but not a retired theologian, still theologing, no such word, but it sounds so good. Theologing along each day, helping people everywhere. And my friend for over 50 years. Mine's only been 20, but his has been like 70, so it averages out. But anyway, through all this time, we're glad that you're there. And also Commander Rob and Nancy Hansen. Commander Rob was a Top Gun pilot and trainer and led a squadron and protected our nation, flew over. He's done a great thing. So there we go. And he has a thumb to prove it. He's out of surgery. Some of that, I think that was the throttle. No, that was the ammunition gun, right? That your thumb.
No, it's for trim and weapon select. But most importantly, I put in my thumb in a blueberry pie. I think there's a poem about that. But
well, if a blackbird comes up on, if we see a blackbird on Nancy's shoulder, we're going to know you're
Dice Clay.
Oh, all right. And Nancy Hansen, who does such a great job in everything she does, helping us, and also, of course,
to control him
and keep us out of jail.
Take care of Rob. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, we're so glad that everybody's here tonight, and those of you listening, and I'm Joe Schofield, I'm blessed to have these people as not only co-hosts with me, but as my good and dear friends in life. So tonight, we want to move right along because we've got somebody really special. In fact, I got a text today, two or three different texts, and years ago, this wonderful doctor we have tonight visiting, he took care of friends of mine from high school, she and her husband, many years ago, and they were so excited, they're calling everybody in Glendale to tell them that Dr. Buckingham is going to be on our program tonight. So there's a California contingent coming in just for you tonight, Doc. So tonight, we want to introduce to you, and I'm going to introduce him right now, and we'll bring you on, Dr. Robert Buckingham, cardiovascular and metabolic disease specialist, and I practice saying that so it would come out right. I hope I said that right. But
spot on.
Thanks, Doc. He is my doctor and fast becoming my friend in Southern California. And he has done so many things. His books, the things that he shares, radio, I've heard him before today. You're in for a real treat tonight. And here's the inside track. I'll tell you something right now. If he really starts talking great stuff that's slightly over our head, I'm not worried because Dr. Thayer, our trauma surgeon, he said, don't worry, Joe, I'll fill you in and make you look good.
So translate, maybe, yeah. If I can. But yeah. I suspect I may not have to because Dr. Buckingham, I'm sure, is used to patients that are looking glassy-eyed, and then you can explain it to anybody. So,
well, and most importantly, we want to know, Doc Buckingham, about Dr. Joe's physical condition and what you can do to enlighten keep him alive.
That's patient.
And what nutritional supplements you recommend for him.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Doc, I told you you're going to like this group. They're really my family. We have a wonderful time. Hey, guys, let's welcome Dr. Buckingham. And, I just want to open up by letting you know, it's really a great thing. I'm not going to go into it, but he strongly believes in five incredibly key points to life and to really taking care of ourselves. He's been coaching me a little on this, and I'm doing my best on these. And Stephanie would really like him, Craig, on the sugar part for what she does.
The inflammatory part. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. So I know you're going to have some great questions for him tonight. So we just want to say, Dr. Buckingham, welcome, sir. It's an honor to have you with us, and all of us welcome you to Raising Expectations.
Thank you. I want to just say a few things. You've got a very remarkable group here, lots of experience. They're going to be able to probably pilfer me with questions about it. So I want to thank you for bringing me on tonight. And I just want you to understand that my journey into this vascular inflammatory process started when I had my own crisis approximately 16 years ago when I required a cardiac stent. And it was at that point that I started to reassess what really was important. In other words, if I was just following the instructions of which at the time were to do certain things, I was still going to run into problems with my health. And so I really had to delve into this area and see if there were some other things that I needed to do, which doctors and healthcare providers really don't talk very much about, but really are the essence of where inflammation comes from.
Oh, that's great.
Yep. Totally agree.
Okay. Craig, do you have a question for him? And then we'll launch.
Well, I have to preface this twofold. So I read something about how we're alike, and that is we're older and have gone through medicine for a while, and we've seen a lot of partners and people disappear, and the evolution of medicine has changed drastically. Secondly, you guys, my family here has to understand the difference between surgery and what he does. So if he and I were standing in an elevator and someone was about to get in the elevator, and the door were closing, he would use his hands to protect his head so that he remained smart. And if it were me, I would put my head in the door.
And get decapitated.
So just so you know, he's the brains and I'm the brawn. So what it is. So highly respect what he does.
There's a song that goes like that, and I think it's called Let's Make Lots of Money, but that's a separate issue from the 80s. Sorry about that. I couldn't help. No, I'd like Dr. Buckingham to talk a lot about inflammation, the circulatory system, and also what the lay people like us can do to help decrease chances of things like heart attack, stroke, stents, and things like that, or the indicators that we might be susceptible to them.
Very good. Very good question. So, and I'm going to just be quite out front here. I'm not telling people to stop their medicines or to stop their medical treatments. Some of these things are actually pretty important. And what I'm about to say is not instead of, but in addition to. So when I talk about trying to find 7 hours of quality sleep at night, or when I talk about stress reduction, or when I talk about eating whole foods and exercising on a daily basis, I'm not saying to do that instead of taking your medicines necessarily for your blood pressure, your diabetes, your cholesterol, or maybe blood thinners. What I'm really pointing the finger at, though, is that if you're doing these things, you are going to reduce the risk of chronic inflammatory progression in all of your end organs, It's not just your heart or your brain, but it's in all of them. It's in your kidneys, your liver, your lungs, your adrenals, even your sex glands. So this is a diffuse and systemic discussion that involves all the organ systems. And when you're doing things in rhythm, you are probably going to be not only reducing heart attacks and strokes and dementia, you're probably also going to be reducing or limiting autoimmune disease, end organ scarring, even cancers and infections. Basically, what you're doing is you're boosting your immune system to where it becomes resistant to a lot of these things that will occur in an end organ interstitial spaces.
You get that?
I hope we can expand on that.
So what he said is inflammation, because it's interesting. I mean, if Steph were on here, this is what she coaches. It's habits, right? It's not just about a diet. It's about mindfulness, sleep, hydration, all the things he just mentioned. So being overweight and having a elevated fats in your blood is inflammatory. Mm-hmm. And if you look at COVID, COVID's an inflammatory disease. It's more like a pulmonary edema. It was weird. The effect on the lung was weird. 73% of the COVID deaths were in obese patients. Mm-hmm. So you've got an inflammatory body. And this is exactly what Dr. Buckingham's talking about, because I loved your February publication, the persistent capillary endothelial. The endothelium is a huge organ in our body. I mean, when that goes bad, it leaks, and that's where we get an 80-pound gain in a day for fluid. Yeah. So I was a biochem major, so I'm geeking out on what you wrote. So that's why I'm
now, what's endothelium?
That's the lining of your tubes, your blood vessels. They produce some of your clotting factors. They're inhibited by aspirin to make you do certain things. So, yeah, it's a huge system that's very important to maintain.
They're inhibited by aspirin?
It inhibits an enzyme called cyclooxygenase, so which makes your platelets not work as well. But
Aspirin's not good then?
No, that's the first thing you give when someone's having maybe a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Within an hour. It's one of the markers in medicine that every ER is measured by. How fast, what was the time to aspirin from chest pain?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is an anti-inflammatory. Dr. Buckingham's talking about is the chronic effect. Mm-hmm. If we just let this stuff go, what happens? And that's what he was talking about. So our endothelium doesn't function right, and there's a whole biochemical thing that happens, and that's the translation. But he can talk about organs and what they do and how it affects those things.
Well, I know a lot of people have, and I have a little experience with this, a diagnosis of elevated liver enzyme levels. And that to me, and a doctor that told me that about 20 years ago said, well, you're just a normal American. You're overweight, you eat the wrong things, and you need to cut back on things. So elevated liver enzymes seem to indicate all the things that can really go wrong with you in your circulatory system, and especially these days, I guess, with the whole COVID thing going on, if you'd like to expand on that.
So let's assume for a moment that your liver enzymes are elevated, do a transitioning of normal liver cells from what we call normal parenchyma to fatty liver transition. Mm-hmm. And let's make the assumption that that's due primarily to the way you're eating or drinking. Well, what happens over a period of time, that is just a sign that your liver is working overtime to deal with all the crap that you're eating, all the food, all the whatever it is, all the primarily highly processed foods and sugars and alcohols and drinks that you're taking in on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
If this is allowed to continue over a period of time, the liver will transition towards cirrhosis or scarring. So there's a transition then from normal liver parenchyma to fatty transposition or transformation to cirrhosis. It's a chronic and progression. And essentially what it is, it's a chronic inflammatory condition in the space of discs, which is the interstitial space in these, in this liver parenchyma, or we call it liver sinusoid. So this is not only happening in the liver, but it's happening everywhere else in all of your organ systems. The liver is just transitioning to fat, but in other organ systems, it's transitioning into other disease venues.
No, that's great. And I think, you know, that one of the reasons I brought that up was because you're a circulatory system expert. If you focus on, say, one organ like liver, that has to have an effect and an impact on everything else in the circulatory system that's going through your body, from your heart all the way down and up and through your head and brain and into your heart again. Which, by the way, how long does that take to get, you know, from a heartbeat through your circulatory system all throughout your body and then up through the head and then back into your heart again?
Very good question. No, it's all a process. You know, when the portal circulation dumps all this toxin to the liver, the liver, it doesn't take long for the liver cell to throw up its hands and say, I'm not going to be able to deal with this. And the liver cell then just sends it to your fat cells in your stomach, and the fat cells swell up, get larger, store all the glycerol it can, makes triglycerides, and then it throws up its hands and says, I can't deal with any more, I'm done. And it will send it back to the liver. And now the liver's got to deal with all this residual. And it will make LDL cholesterol. It will send blood sugar into the bloodstream. It will increase advanced glycation end product, which is another, we'll call a vascular inflammatory free radical. And it will send a lot of other inflammatory proteins into the central circulation. This happens pretty quickly. So now it's all circulating throughout the endothelium, gets then into the capillaries of end organs. And now the capillaries have to deal with this inflammatory assault on their continuous outer membrane and glycocalyx. So it's a process that you could say begins in the small bowel and leaky gut, which ends up in the liver. But you can get vascular inflammatory issues coming in. You can be breathing them in. You can be getting them from your skin or mucous membranes or sinuses. You can get these processes coming in from a lot of different places.
It seems too, Doc, that there seems to be sort of an epidemic of diabetes. And I bring that up because there's actually two things, obesity and diabetes. And I was thinking, this might be a good thing to talk about for the listening audience and watching audience, about why are so many Americans experiencing both obesity and diabetes, and are they both nutrition food related or not, or sugar related?
I mean, that's a great question. So we have a lot of things going on at the same time. We have people who are basically wired in on their computers. They're sitting in front of their computers for multiple hours a day, essentially not burning up much energy or physical energy. They're just kind of sitting in one place for many, many hours. Then you've got a diet which has transitioned from, let's say, more whole or natural food into one that is more highly processed, where you've got a lot of highly white flour processed snack foods, highly white processed breads and pastas. And basically, these are like eating donuts. A lot of this highly refined sugar. It may not be sweet like a donut, but it has the same kind of sugar content as a donut does. So you've got all of this processing going on. People are, once you start in the end of the processed milieu, you want to eat more and more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of begets itself. You eat more cereal, you want more bread, you want more bread, you want more crackers, you want more crackers, you want more yogurt, you want more yogurt, you want more ice cream. It just kind of goes into a vicious circle. And before you know it, you have a tsunami of sugar just constantly going into your liver. And of course, the liver just throws up its hands. It can only do so much before it transitions. So as you might well guess, this is the way you become. I think there was a doctor who wrote about the wheat belly diet, belly.
Cardiologist.
When you're eating a lot of this highly refined sugar all the time or processed food, it's unmistakable what's going to happen. You're going to increase blood sugars. You're going to increase belly fat, and you're going to become metabolic.
Right. Yeah, I read that book. It's a good book. Cardiologist wrote it. He just noticed that a bunch of his patients that were kind of in shape had beer bellies or wheat bellies, and they had heart disease. So, yeah, which is, you know, what you've heard me rant about, a keto diet. So it's fat and protein and no carbs. And just one really fatty meal raises your cardiac enzymes and inflammatory enzymes huge. So
that's actually a good thing to talk about, because obviously keto's all the rage and has been for a few years.
Yeah, they come and go. They come and go, don't they?
What's your thought on keto, Dr. Buckingham?
So what I tell it, and by the way, gentlemen, I've written a few books. The first one was Hazing Aging, when I go into a little bit about keto. But the second book, Rejuvenation, and then the third book, Trafficking, and then Rejuvenation 2.0, goes into detail about these different diets. And essentially what I tell people is this. There are good carbohydrates and there are bad carbohydrates. There are good fats, there are bad fats. And there are good proteins and there are bad proteins. Good carbohydrates are the complex carbohydrates or the highly fibrous carbohydrates you might find in cruciferous vegetables. The cabbages, the chards, the onions, the spinaches, those sorts of vegetables. The bad carbohydrates are the refined carbohydrates, and they're the ones you're going to find in the highly processed white flours, the snack foods, the desserts, the cereals, the cookies, the pastas, the breads. Now, when it comes to fats, this is a little bit more difficult to discuss, but essentially there are good fats. The omega-3 fats, for example, the ones that you might find in fish or in nuts, those are good fats. The monounsaturated fats that are found in olive oil or in avocado, those are good fats. Those are anti-inflammatory fats. When those are beta-oxidized in mitochondria, they end up doing good things for energy and good things for nitric oxide production. Now, the bad fats, the fats that we need to avoid, the fats that are associated with escalation of cardiovascular issues, those are the so-called trans fats, which are polyunsaturated oils that have been cooked even lightly. So if you add a polyunsaturated oil, let's say you're cooking in it or you're baking in it, those will immediately go to trans fats, and trans fats are highly pro-inflammatory. Another saturated fat that's highly pro-inflammatory are the so-called saturated fats from animals. For example, the saturates you might find in pork or in red meat, say beef, hamburger.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, I just ribeye fat would be really good for me.
Those kinds of saturated fats that are found in those kinds of meats are highly inflammatory for a lot of different reasons. So there are good fats and there are bad fats. The good proteins then are connected to the good and bad fats. So good proteins are found in, for example, certain beans, some of the mixed vegetables. fish and a free range chicken, whereas bad fats are found in things like hot dogs, organ meats, bacon, hamburger.
So, you know, the simple way I've explained
it already
is the more legs, the worse it is.
There you go.
A cow, there you go. A pig, four legs. Not good. Chicken, turkey, better. Fish, no legs. Beans, yeah, none. So, even better.
Oh, boy. So, is any of that fat good if you're on a keto diet? In other words, you know, the bacon or the meats, red meats, fat, is that considered a good fat from a keto diet standpoint?
No. As a matter of fact, when the original keto diet was actually called the Atkins diet. Atkins actually did not restrict the kind of fat that you could use. And unfortunately, in his diet, there were a lot of adverse cardiovascular outcomes. So the best way to approach this, the keto diet needs to be involving certain kinds of protein and certain kinds of fat and complex, if you're going to use carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates like the cruciferous vegetables I mentioned. It should not involve any of the highly processed flours. It shouldn't involve any of the sugars. It shouldn't involve any of the sweetened drinks. And, of course, alcohol is part of that complex as well. If you're trying to lose weight, alcohol sugars are not going to get it done.
Okay. But we're not doomed to a life of eating hay and bananas then.
No
more blueberry muffins for me.
Do we need an opinion on fudge?
Christmas, the ghost of Stephanie is listening.
Yes, I had to pipe in for Steph.
Right. Hey, folks, I got to take a 60-second break as we think about this, and you can join in with me. We want to take just a moment. And, Doc, I'd like to come back after, too, and have you share a little bit, if you would, from the aging agent that was so interesting to me about the lifestyle changes, because I think we struggle with lifestyle changes. The things you shared with me, most guys are professional and the ladies professional here, and these things are really important, but we got something we want to share real quick. We have a wonderful couple, Joe Duran and his wife and his dad, and his company is called, you ready? 4D Financial, and he's out of Houston, Texas. Got a couple of great things to tell you about. He wants to help you with your finances, and he's got a family-run business, so he understands your family. He also would help you save for retirement. That's something you can really use after COVID. Investments and savings, getting out of debt. I don't know if you know anybody needs help. Joe's the man that can help you, Joe Duran. Maybe saving for your children's college, whatever that might be, or a financial plan, anything you need this way. And here's the good news again. The financial plan is absolutely complimentary with 4D Financial. Joe and his family and his team, that is no charge whatsoever. And a side caveat or a side bullet for you right here. Listen close. Maybe you know someone, and maybe you're a person looking for part-time, a new career after what we've gone through with COVID, or maybe you've got too old and they've downsized. I have no idea. You don't need to have experience. They will teach you, and they'll pay for your license, and they'll help you be a part of Durant's 4D Financial, helping people in all 50 states, wherever you might be. So here's the site. Thanks, guys. Joe Duran, learnwithourteam.com. And that phone number is 832-308-7631. Give Joe a call. I know he'll love to talk with you, and you'll be glad you talked with him. All right, Joe, God bless you and your family. But Doc, we want to come back to you on this point, and very professional. We do
paid thousands of dollars for that sign.
That's right.
Awesome.
As you can imagine.
Hey, what fun was that?
Hey, that sign's custom.
What font was that?
I think it was Times New Roman, actually.
Good. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Hey, Nancy, we had people calling in today. They want to know about that. Where did they get those signs? And so we'll get you something going on the side on that. That would be a good one.
I think we can sell them for $1
million. $1 million, right. Exactly. Uh-huh. All right. Hey, well, Doc, I just want to throw a question out from your book, Hazing Aging. It was really interesting to me, and the things that you shared with me have meant a lot to me. I've been doing a lot of praying on the things you said. Dr. Buckingham is a man of faith like we are, and he knows how the body is put together and that circulatory system, as you've all addressed. He gave out five things to help us remember. I don't know if you remember exactly, but the key points to helping us as we grow old drastically prolong our lifespan so that we are useful. And all the things God has taught you and the things you've learned, hey, mm-hmm. we want to share those. You are people of great value, and many, many people are of great value and they don't know it. So that first one that really got a hold of me, number one, and I'll throw it out and maybe the others you just roll with, Dr. Buckingham, but one was getting, number one, key points, 5 points. Listen to this, guys. Getting old, losing relevance and feeling bad, that's a bad choice. And too many times we end up in that, and a lot of people are going through that now. Doc, could you address some of those for us a little bit as you had shared some of those with me, those points?
So, you know, what happens is we get we get into a tsunami of pro-inflammatory let's say escalation in all of our end organs. And when we get into that tornado, we end up adversely affecting all of our end organs so that we hurt more, we have more fatigue, we can't remember stuff, we can't problem solve, we lose energy, and in essence, we lose relevance. Mm-hmm. So what has to happen as we get older is we have to become more intentional about what we are going to do to ourselves so that we can prevent some of these outcomes. Intentionality turns out to be very important. If we just let things come at us and we react to them, that's called being reactive, we are not being proactive enough in managing some of these things so that we don't have to deal with some of the pro-inflammatory outcomes that we've been talking about.
Mm. Yes. Now, inflammation, Doc, and I'm kind of a victim of this, doesn't necessarily mean just my circulatory system. I've had low back problems for 35 years from, you know, flying planes, pulling G's, getting beat up at Sears School and that sort of thing. And I've had a couple of low back surgeries in the last year. Is the circulatory system part of the, you know, arthritic thing in either the back or anywhere else in the body, or
by the way,
degenerative discs or anything?
You're
like
really
that?
Good. You asked some amazing questions. That is an absolute...
I'm just a knucklehead. I don't get it myself.
No, you're dead on, man. They're great
that
questions.
That is spot on. That is a very good question. The answer is yes. Yes. Chronic inflammatory behaviors affect the endothelial system. Then that gets involving with all of the end organ interstitial spaces, which includes joints, muscles, tendons, ligaments, and according, of course, your lower back. Mm-hmm. So that if your endothelium and interstitial spaces are chronically inflamed, yes, you're going to have more pain, you're going to have more inflammation, you're going to have weakness back there, you're going to have ridiculous symptoms down your legs. It's going to be, now, you reach a certain point in this chronic inflammatory process where even if you radically change these things, you may still have some residual pain and inflammation. But the point I'm trying to make is you can make pretty significant inroads in how you feel everywhere compared to maybe if you did nothing but react. In my book, Hazing Aging, there is a subchapter in there called My Changes. And what that chapter talks about are all of my organ systems and what happened to them as I transitioned to an anti-inflammatory lifestyle. And it wasn't just my heart or my brain. It was every single organ system. I was on 7 prescriptions at one time. And I was able to get off of all of them except one. And the reason I was able to do that is because of the outcomes to this anti-inflammatory adjustment that I was making in all of my lifestyle.
Well, that's something we should expand on here, Doctor.
What'd you do?
Well, people wonder. Essentially, what I get, very good question. So, essentially, being a doctor, you know, we're pretty plugged into being pro-inflammatory. So, I was up all night. I was essentially managing our small little hospital here in Ojai. I was doing all the critical care, admitting most of the inpatients. And I was burning the candle, the midnight candle, on both ends. And as a result of that, I had weight creep. I had stress creep. I had sleep deprivation. My serum cholesterol, blood sugars, all and blood pressures were all going up in kind of in unison. And once I had my stent, I took 3 steps back and I said, I've got to do something different. Otherwise, I'm going to be disabled in 3 years. I can't continue to do what I've been doing. So I stopped stopped doing a lot of the intensive care and critical care work. I cut back my night hours substantially. In fact, by age 63 or 4, I really cut back on night stuff. Almost, I can count on my one hand the number of times I've gone to the hospital at night in the last 7 years. So this is all very important because it helped me form intentionality to some of my decisions. You have to understand that when you're under stress, and I haven't really gone into this very much, but when you're under stress, you're making stress hormones. And when you make stress hormones, your subliminal behavior starts to change. You mean you're looking for bagels and cream cheese. You're looking for a pick-me-up in the middle of the night. You're looking for things that are pro-inflammatory. The same thing happens when you're sleep-deprived. If you have untreated obstructive sleep apnea, or you've got insomnia, or you're only sleeping 4 hours at night, your stress hormones go up, and before you know it, you're subliminally looking for more sugar, more something to satisfy, make you comfortable. So, you know, the bagels, the cream cheese, the bread, the potatoes, all of that escalates, and all of a sudden you've got weight gain, and you're metabolic and pre-diabetic or diabetic. All of these things are interchangeable and interactive, then they're all pro-inflammatory.
And what do you find in the ER, OR, ICU?
I got to tell you something. The ER was my favorite spot. Not only was the refrigerator full, but I could almost always find some leftover. I could find some leftover pizza or some carrot cake or something down there. And that's exactly what I wanted at 11 o'clock at night.
And when I trained, the medical ICU always knew where you could find a fresh pizza delivered for you at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely.
And I guess crackers and peanut butter are a big thing, too, in the ER and I guess in medical residency.
They're horrible. They're donuts. There's
whatever you can get your hands on, huh?
Well, let's put it this way. The more decadent, the better. I mean, listen, if you got a choice between a donut and peanut butter, you're taking the donut. Sorry.
And putting peanut butter on it, right?
It's portable and you don't have to wash your hands.
Or something. I mean, the last thing to go in the emergency room is the most healthy stuff. The first thing to go is the least healthy.
Leave that salad there.
Tray of celery and carrots.
Paul, it's your turn. Go ahead. I know you have a question or two.
I appreciate Dr. Buckingham what you said. I read a portion of your Hazing Aging today, and as I read about your experience with a stent, I think it's been well said, you don't rethink something, you relive a memory. I had the same experience, the LAD, and mine was 96% blocked, and it was a pretty horrific experience, which really makes you think about a lot of different things. I really appreciated what you had to say about how it affected your psyche. You know, these are things that don't happen to us. It happens to everybody else, but not us. But when it does happen, and I like the word you're using, intentional, it sounds like we have to give up so much to be healthy. But if we realize the other end of that spectrum is, as we become more healthy, we really haven't given up anything except the things that are killing us. I went to the doctor today. My blood panels came out really good and things seem to be in good order and things like that. But I just wanted to express appreciation, you know, for what you've done and the insights you've given, and Tank, the way that you brought some light to it as well. The word vascular inflammatory risk, or that phrase, that's something I really hadn't heard before. So it's new to me to, you know, to think about inflammatory. I've heard a lot about leaky guts lately. It's affected a number of people in my family. Can you kind of speak to that? I know you addressed it with the liver functions and things like that, but I just find that people that I deal with are in such a sense of general unease about their physical health, you know, and they wonder what in the world's going on, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I've been clear or not, but I guess I'm looking for more clarification, because we've just kind of run across the top here, you know.
Let's go into that. That's a very good lead in. By the way, after I had my stent, the doctor called me into his office a week later, and he said, you know, you've got a 30%er behind the 90%er we fixed. We'll probably be seeing you in 3 years. Right. That's almost a direct quote. So I left that office thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to get out of this. I'm stuck. And so almost with a sense of desperation, that's when I started diving into research and started looking into things that I thought that I, because he wasn't telling me anything except that I'd be seeing him in 3 years for another stent.
Exactly.
I mean, it sounded pretty hopeless to me.
Right.
So that's when I started really working in on this. So to answer your question, and I think we all, unfortunately, whether it's cancer or if it's heart disease or if it's a stroke, we're all put in this position of, once we're there, it's kind of like we have a fatalistic place. We don't really have a way out. It's pretty difficult. So I want to make this really simple. When we talk about lifestyle, whether it's sleep, stress, exercise, diet, even spirituality, we're talking about behaviors that are either pro-inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. Behaviors that are pro-inflammatory are going to increase chronic interstitial space inflammation, and they are going to inevitably cause diseases in those spaces. Those diseases are going to be thrombosis or clotting, scarring, autoimmune disease, infections, or cancer. Any one of those, or in combination, will occur if we continue our pro-inflammatory ways. Hmm. If we go anti-inflammatory, if we are exhibiting behaviors that are consistently anti-inflammatory, those are immune-boosting behaviors. So even if you have some inflammation already in your spaces, those immune-boosting behaviors are going to suppress them. So even if you've got a few cancer cells somewhere, they're not going to go anywhere. If you've got a tendency to have clotting problems, there's going to be resistance against that. If you have a tendency for autoimmune diseases, there's going to be resistance towards their progression. If you have a tendency towards infections, there will be resistance against that. If you have a tendency towards fatty liver and scarring of the liver, there'll be resistance against that. So anti-inflammatory behaviors actually support you by preventing chronic inflammatory progression of these disease endpoints.
Interesting.
Now, does the inflammatory system have a relationship with the immune system?
Yes.
Because obviously the immune system is something that, you know, people are talking a lot about, especially with the COVID situation.
So when you're chronically inflamed, when chronic inflammation is going on, it's going on in all of your end organs, all of your interstitial spaces, and all of these disease venues I just talked about are outcomes to chronic inflammatory or pro-inflammatory behavior. On the other hand, if you are living an anti-inflammatory lifestyle, those chronic inflammatory outcomes are suppressed because your immune system is stimulated. It is working in overdrive to protect you. When you're in a pro-inflammatory rhythm or pro-inflammatory and chronic inflammatory rhythm, you're immune suppressed. So your immune system is not capable of managing your interstitial spaces in the way it should.
Now, when you're young, and this is where, you know, we've been talking back and forth with Nancy and I about when we were kids, you know, we'd drink out of the water fountain and we'd
eat play in the mud
and we'd step on nails and we'd get all this stuff. And we think that it sort of built up our immune system because over the last year, we've been around people with COVID and we never caught it. But I also kind of think about when we're young, you know, is there a genetic predisposition towards a circulatory problem later on in life? Because obviously you guys, you know, especially when you went to medical school, and in my case, when I went to the Naval Academy, yeah, there was a lot of stress. But in my case, there was also a lot of physical activity. And I don't know if that helped or not, but I'm still here, so I guess it must have. But I mean, in terms of your physical system and everything,
hereditary
situations, you know,
does that make a difference?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the first thing. When you were kids, and I really like this, you exposed yourself to a certain volume of inoculum. You essentially, when your immune system is in a pretty good shape and you expose yourself to these inoculums, yes, you actually can develop a resistance towards some of these problems that might have occurred. I'm not going to go so far as to say it's an immune, like a vaccine, but you were basically kind of auto-vaccinating yourself against some of these issues, which was fine. It was good. We're learning this, by the way, with allergies. If you expose a young kid to, say, a dog or a cat, maybe they won't have the allergies later on in life. So we're learning a lot about this as a part of being young and having exposures and maybe modulating our immune system to be more resistant towards these things later. Now, in response to your question about heredity, very good question. Can somehow anti-inflammatory behaviors, when practiced consistently, overcome, say, a pro-inflammatory predisposition from our inherited forefathers? And the answer is yes, at least to some degree. If you're practicing, for example, if you're not, let's say your father had a heart attack at 52 and his father had a heart attack at 52, or maybe your grandmother had pancreatic cancer and one of your sisters has pancreatic cancer. The point is that if you're living an anti-inflammatory lifestyle, you are going to become more resistant to having those things, but it's not going to be completely gone away. You still have to pay attention to, for example, if you're talking about heart attacks, you still have to pay attention to things like your LDL cholesterol, your lipoprotein little A, your blood sugars, and the other vascular inflammatory free radicals, which may be in your interstitial spaces. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you can divest some of this risk through appropriate anti-inflammatory lifestyles, but not all of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I hear you saying basically that even if there's a predisposition towards either cancers or strokes or heart attacks, all is not lost, that there are things and actions and activities that people can do that can either prevent the onset of or avoid altogether any of those things that may have happened in, family history of cancers and strokes and heart attacks and whatever. And again, a lot of it,
or diabetes, or
yes,
all of those things can be mitigated substantially. They may not be able to mitigate them completely, but you can mitigate them substantially to a place where you might need far less medicinal support or surgical support to protect yourself.
And most of it seems to come from diet.
It comes from all of those things. They have equal importance.
Okay.
If you're not sleeping well at night, if you're waking up frequently and going to the bathroom and you're snoring loudly, that's not going to work well. That's not going to work well. If you're under an incredible amount of stress for whatever reason, maybe your dog just died, or your wife is sick, or you're having to take care of somebody that's sick. That's very stressful, and that's going to impact your health. So it's not just diet. Diet's critical, don't get me wrong. But it's also the fact, if you're sitting in front of a computer 7-8 hours a day, surfing the net or doing whatever you do, that's stressful, and that's not going to work. That's not going to. That's not an anti-inflammatory behavior.
Hey, folks, I got to jump in here for a second. We got like 4 minutes. I want to do two things. One, I want to remind everybody that we are a listener-supported program and show. And if you go to the website, our technical crew is getting a sign, I think, maybe up for the website. And once again, we have that for you. Maybe we don't. It's simply bbsradio.com/raising expectations. And there it is. Whoa, is that a great sign or what? If you look,
professionally done as always.
Yeah, and we got the forward slash for you, Rob, in there. So that's what we got. Hey,
We want to
say thanks to those who are giving and donation. That's keeping us on the air and helping us. If you can donate a little, that would be great. Just go to that site. There's a tab on there that says donation. Just touch the donation. PayPal is there. It's special protection for you, 5 times encrypted. And it will just send a pen through there and say, sign here. You got it made. So in any event, thanks for helping us on that. I just want to, again, take an opportunity to thank Dr. Buckingham for being with us. Craig, really great, huh?
Totally. I'm just sad that Steph's not here, because she would love what you're saying in any way. It's the same thing she's trying to do.
Well, I think we should bring Dr. Buckingham back on the program again.
Oh, yeah.
I'll keep checking every time I have an appointment, or better than that.
By the way, we've just scratched the surface here. Have you talked to these
folks?
Have you talked to these folks about, I won't get into that, but I was actually nominated for a Nobel Prize my work on capillary cell mitochondrial combustion and continuous outer membrane permeability.
That's awesome. It should be.
Do you have a book there?
That's the whole secret to trauma, I think.
Dr. Buckingham, do you have a book?
I will show you the book. I will show you one of them.
Okay. There you go.
This is called Rejuvenation 2.0.
I saw that.
That's great.
This was published in 2019.
All right.
And one other book is coming out this year called How Dancing Really Stops the Clock.
There you go. Cool. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bring Dr. Buckingham back. We're going to bring him back and have, and if you would, sir, be so kind as to tell us about those awards when we bring you back on. I'm going to see if we can't get Sheila and to check your schedule. We can work to have you back. We have thoroughly enjoyed. I feel it. I'm so glad that you're my doctor, and I'm excited that the people have got to hear from you tonight. And we'll do this again. And we'll want to ask you a few questions about fudge on the next one. But we'll wait.
On geritol.
Walnuts, almonds.
Let's give Dr. a hand. We want to thank you.
Thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure.
You are a blessing.
It's awfully nice being with a bunch of Christian guys and gals.
Amen.
It's all cool.
Amen. Yeah. It is. All right.
That would have been my next question, just for the next time we get you to think about, is how have you been able to, if you can, incorporate Christianity into your practice?
There you go. I know he did.
Excellent question.
Amen. Excellent. All right. Going to have to break. Write these down. We're going to get the next time. I'm going to see if I can't get us all over tomorrow and reschedule and run from where we are. Again, thank you, Doctor. You are loved and appreciated by everyone. Thanks for being on the program.
Great job, Doctor.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Same time, same station, Raising Expectations, right here on the BBS Radio Television Network. Thanks for being with us. You're what makes it special. May God bless you and draw you close and give you great answers to great expectations all through your week. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week. All right.
Take care, everybody.
See you later.
Bye.
Good seeing you guys.
Say bye to Steph.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556. Or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.